And now to share today's message, we have Rosie.
Just checking to see if we could do something with technology for about halfway through. We'll see. Let's mark in. Good morning. This is from the Reverend Ellen Ellen Quadgrass. And it's How We Come Back, Stories of Resilience. I volunteered to do this sermon weeks and weeks ago because this is one of my favorite topics about personal growth is resilience. And many of the references cited in here were things that I had used in my own journey to become more resilient. And so it really spoke to me. So so I can offer a little bit more about that after, but I'll share this with you. And I asked Sarah just now if in the middle there's a part where she references a video, and I thought, well, if we can get that video, it'd be more fun to watch it than to me to read about it, but I'll read about it if we can't get the video to work, so it's no big deal. So Pema Chodron, who we heard from Joel's reading, is a Buddhist nun, and she is a best-selling author, and Reverend Quadra says, one of my most influential spiritual teachers, and I would say that's true for me as well. I've read almost every one of her books and listened to her published talks probably dozens of times. In a sermon on resilience, Reverend Rob Hardies relays a turning point story from Pema Chodron's life about the day that things fell apart. So back then, she hadn't discovered Buddhism or taken the name Pema Chodron. Back then, she was Deidre Broomfield Brown, a wife, mother, and school teacher living in New Mexico. And then one morning, and I've seen her tell this story, while she stood there outside of her adobe home, just sipping a cup of tea and staring out at the landscape, she heard the car drive up and the car door bang shut. Her husband walked around the corner of the house and without any warning said, "I'm having an affair and I want a divorce." So, you know how sometimes when you receive shocking news, you dissociate, go numb for a while? That's what happened to Pema Chodron at first when her husband told her he wanted to leave. She writes, "First, I just noticed the sky, how blue it was. I saw the river. I saw the steam rising from my cup of tea. There was no time or thought. There was just light and a profound stillness." Before long, though, Pema came to her sense, bent over, picked up a rock, and threw it at her husband's head. As Hardy comments, "It isn't great that Pema Chodron threw a rock at her husband's head. This paragon of mindfulness, I think there's some hope for the rest of us, though, if Pema Chodron also throws rocks at her husband." And that's good, because these kinds of things happen to us, too. That story from Pema Chodron is in a book called When Things Fall Apart. Not if you know if when, but if. Sorry. Not if you will know, but when. So it's not if things fall apart, but when things fall apart. Job loss, divorce, illness, financial setback, loss of a loved one, some revelation about your family, some dream that now is clear to you will never really come true, at least not in the way that you had fervently hoped. Things fall apart all of the time. And getting from breakdown to breakthrough is not always as easy as just reading a book or throwing a rock at your husband's head. There's a TED Talk by a woman named Amy Purdy. At 19, she was full of hope and ready to take on the world, as most of us are at 19. She wanted to travel and see the world. She flew off to a place with snow, and she brought her snowboard, found a job as a massage therapist, and she said for the first time in her life, she felt free, independent, and in control of her life. 2 days into this new adventure, she went home with a fever, and then landed in the hospital with a case of bacterial meningitis that almost killed her. She lost a spleen, a kidney, and both of her legs below the knee. She felt like a patchwork doll, she said, but she was managing to hold it all together. So until surgeons came forward with her brand new artificial legs. Keep in mind, she was holding it together until they brought out these new legs. The calves were bulky blocks of metal with pipes bolted together for the ankles and a yellow rubber foot with a raised line from the toe to the ankle that made it look like a vein. When she saw that, she lost it. She crawled under the covers in a state of hopelessness, she said, that lasted for months. And Amy's not unusual. And while not all challenges are so physically profound, they can have equally strong repercussions in us. When the divorce is finally final and you have the papers in your hand, something hits home. When the funeral of your loved one is over and you come home to an emptier house or an emptier world, when you finally recognize that you will not regain all of that energy or capacity you had before the last illness, when you fail that milestone test or realize something will not ever be what you had so fervently hoped, some weight sits on your chest and you're not sure it will ever go away. When hard things happen, we humans are vulnerable to losing hope. So like Amy, pulling the covers over our heads, giving up. It's an experience that can happen to us, and it's an experience that happens to those we love. And there is a place we sometimes land, this hopeless place. It's the place before resilience. We don't talk about it all that much because what do you say about it? Maybe it scares us a little bit, but I imagine we've all been there. We've all seen others go there. Where it's like you've been caught up in this avalanche of negative thinking that sweeps all of your support down with it. Or like being inside some bubble of disillusionment where everything from there looks pointless. All the things that seemed promising before look different or unhelpful, or maybe even are different to you because something about you is different. And it's a sticky place, a really tricky place, where that negativity gets in your eyes, it gets in your perceptions, when no matter what someone says to you, no matter how helpful they're trying to be, everything goes through some twisted Google translator that makes it all sound bad. Well-meaning suggestions come through as a lack of confidence in you. Reminders of the bright side leave you feeling just unheard or more alone. And when you're on the other side, if you've ever tried to cheer up someone in that state, you know how well that goes too. So there's this place, this dark place, this place before resilience where we can get stuck, where well-meaning efforts don't always help. So there's this YouTube video. Are we gonna get it to work? It has audio too, and that could be tricky for us. But we're gonna try, and if not, we'll go on. I'll give you the intro while if we'll try again. But so Brené Brown is the researcher on empathy, and this video reminds you that there's one thing that might help. Okay, guys, that's here. So in the video, there's this young fox who has a cloud over her head, and it's raining, right? We've seen those pictures. But the cloud is just raining on her. And then her friend, Bear, stands next to her, and he doesn't have a rain cloud over him. Suddenly, the ground beneath Fox's feet cracks open, and she falls into this deep, dark hole. She calls up, "I'm stuck. It's dark. I'm overwhelmed." And Bear throws down a rope ladder. He climbs down, and on the way down, he says, "I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone." And then their friend Antelope comes up. And Antelope looks down from the hole at the top, and she's chewing on a sandwich and says, "Ooh, that looks bad. Hey, want a sandwich?" And it's a tone that's not empathetic. Then Antelope goes on to try to point out all the silver linings. Silver linings like, what if you had a miscarriage? At least you know you can get pregnant. What? John's kicked out of school? At least Sarah's an A student. What? You're worried your marriage is falling apart? At least you have a marriage. These aren't necessarily helpful. Empathy is a choice, Brené suggests, and it's a vulnerable choice. Because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows the same feeling. So in the video, Bear pulls from under his baseball cap a rain cloud that looks just like the one raining on Fox, and he puts it over his head. Now both of them are standing at the bottom of the hole getting wet together. I don't even know what to say right now, Bear says. I'm just so glad you told me. I sometimes think that as much as we want to help pull people out of the negative spaces they are in, much as we want to point them toward the light, sometimes what we really need is for us to keep them company in the dark, at least for a little while, offering presence, warmth, kindness, just a simple presence, a reminder that they're not alone, that the feelings they have aren't wrong, that they are okay no matter what just happened. Your simple presence can be a sign that you trust their ability to put the pieces back together in a way that works for them. Because ultimately, they're the ones who can. And when we are in that space, when it's us who feel lost and alone, when it is we who are rushing to put that vase of our lives back together just the way it used to be, trying to convince ourselves that we're fine, I wonder if the answer is not the same. A gentle trust in ourselves, in our ability to sort through the pieces and create something new in time. A trust that we are fundamentally okay no matter what just happened, even as it feels how it feels, which is bad, right? Even as we reach for connection with others who can listen, with others who can help, even as we reach for a connection with the simple goodness that is always part of life. I read a story of a Tibetan Buddhist nun who, years ago, was interviewed after a long imprisonment by the Chinese government. A reporter asked her how she had survived all of those years in solitary confinement. She replied, "I knew that at every moment, somewhere in the world, someone was saying metta for me." So, and every moment, she imagined, someone was holding her in their hearts, reminding her she's not alone, not beyond love, as the poet wrote. One of the most powerful tools I learned from Pema Chodron, our iconic rock thrower from the beginning of this sermon, is a way of using our imaginations to stay balanced, to work with heavy feelings, and to remind ourselves we are not alone. "Breathe in the dark," she said, "and breathe out the light. Breathe in as you allow yourself to experience disappointment, your disillusionment, your loneliness, your fear, then breathe out light, not just for yourself, but for all the other beings who are feeling that same thing too. Breathe in the pain of your mistakes or those of others, and breathe out sunshine and birdsong and fireplaces and fresh bread for yourself and for all beings who are in that same pain. Soon you will know that you are not alone." One of Pema's teachers said to her once, "Please keep working with negative feelings, hard emotions. You will be such an inspiration for others." We too can move from a story of defeat and isolation to one of courage and connection, maybe even inspiration, one breath at a time. Letting go again and again of our thoughts, letting go of what we thought was immutable, and learning that reality is bigger, always bigger, than our limited minds can grasp. When our stories break, when the pieces no longer fit the way they did, when our feelings are an avalanche of negativity, we don't have to give in, and we also don't have to pretend that we're just fine. We can breathe consciously, take care of ourselves. We can remember goodness, kindness, and fresh bread. Remember, we can connect with others, even if only in our heads. We can give ourselves time to grieve, even as we keep putting one foot in front of the other, reassembling the pieces, walking a path towards something new. And the more we practice these habits, the more resilient we become. Preach. And the more even old, sometimes long-forgotten traumas start to work their way out of our system. Until we start seeing our tomorrows in a fresh light, day by mindful day. Amy Purdy, the young woman who lost her legs in the TED Talk I described earlier, doesn't go into any detail about what happened in or around her during those hopeless months in bed. She doesn't share if she had visitors, doesn't share if she felt alone, doesn't say what the journey through discouragement looked like for her. We just know she came out the other side. One day she woke up and had, she said, a flash of insight about those horrible metal bolted legs which sent her under the covers in the first place. She realized that they were very much not hers, and that also meant they could be changed, swapped out. So while she'd been 5'5", she now could be as tall as she wanted, or as short, depending on who she was dating. It meant that she could snowboard without her feet getting cold. And it meant she could make her feet whatever size she wanted to fit all the shoes on the sales rack. Clearly, she'd gotten her sense of humor back. But what now? In her turning point moment, she came face to face with this question. If my life were a book and I were the author, how would I want things to go next? What new chapter is opening up for me now? What am I doing with this new reality in place? So she researched artificial limbs and feet for a year, not finding any that were going to work for snowboarding. So she built her own pair. Through her efforts and ingenuity, she ultimately won 2 back-to-back World Cup snowboarding medals, became the highest-ranked adaptive snowboarder in the world, and she ultimately founded a nonprofit so other young adults with physical disabilities could get involved in active sports, turning her own adversity into a gift for others. If you ask me today if I would ever change my situation, I would have to say no, Amy said at the end of her talk, because my legs haven't disabled me. If anything, they enabled me. They forced me to rely on my imagination and to believe in the possibilities. Because in our minds, we can do anything and we can be anything. So as we walk through the dark, we may just find ourselves cleared out for a life that is inexplicably wider, deeper, richer than it was before. We may just find ourselves brought more alive. And that is also true, as Ram Dass once said, we are all just walking each other home. May we accompany each other on the journey as day by day we build ourselves anew.
Thank you, Rosie. And we have time for some conversation, questions, thoughts. Does anybody have something they'd like to share?
I can say, one of the things I love about the topic of resilience is that it puts the that dark place that they talk about before resilience is, I've experienced so many times, and it's such a place of hopelessness, and it and resilience and building resilience puts that the control of that experience back in your hands. So and you know, these inspiring stories are so great, but they also can come across as sound, especially TED Talks. You know, all TED Talks are like, they can be very inspiring, but they can also be like, okay, well, that was written to be inspiring, right? Like, I don't know that the experience really went that way. But to hear about this young woman who was dealt a really crappy hand and decided to say, yep, I was dealt a really crappy hand, and now this is what I'm going to do with it, that's the lesson of resilience for me, is everybody gets dealt crappy hands. Everybody does. So then once you're over the mourning, like once you go through the sadness And you need to feel that. You need to do those things too. But then what are you going to do? What happens next? So, yeah.
What comes to my mind about resilience is the picture in the paper yesterday of all the people marching in Minneapolis. I mean, this crowd went on for blocks. And I hope it doesn't continue so long, or maybe it will, that we need to get out in the street and support them.
Yeah, I did a, because I love this topic and I was thinking a lot about it this week in preparation for this. I watched a lot of videos and read a bunch. And one of the things that I came across that immediately was like, this is Minneapolis, is that, and it wasn't about Minneapolis, it was about communities can have resilience. And it was examples of that, and every example is like, oh, this is Minneapolis. They help their friends and neighbors. They accept that they're in it together. They accept that what's in front of them is not, that it's changed. Like, things have changed. And so now what are we going to do about it? And they take action, and they do it with laughter. And I know we all have seen the horrific things that have happened this week, but they're out there in pickle costumes, confronting police. They're mocking ICE, not police, ICE. They're mocking ICE. They make the experience fun for themselves. They pass out donuts. They, you know, like, they take care of each other and find simple joys in some of what they're doing, and face their fears. And that is such a fine example of community resilience. But all communities, including ours, can have resilience, and that's something that we can build. I just thought that was really interesting when I came across that.
Thinking about could she go back? I tried to stay with my spouse when I started to transition. She could not see herself as a lesbian, and I thought back about that. And you know, it'd be nice if that could have happened, but I'm really happy with who I am now. So yeah. But the other thing I wanted to mention is our Catalyst group is about silliness. Well, but if you understand silliness, it can be holy. It can be something that will expose those, the court jester will expose people who are not doing appropriate. And the trickster works from the other direction, and he opens space for new ideas. So we're going to talk about all that. If you'd like to come join us, that'd be wonderful.
Just wanted to add to what Jeff was saying about the response in Minneapolis, and I've been keeping up with that as well. And what is really encouraging to me is how fast, organized, and decentralized their response has been. And I won't go into the details right now, but it's really, really cool what they're doing, and it's very transferable. It's not unique to Minneapolis. It's pretty it's pretty doable. But it's also, and not to catastrophize, but things, I mean, they're not just going to give up, and things will get worse before they get better, and they will likely come here, and there will likely be some kind of military occupation of our own country. Like, this is the Nazi playbook that they are working with, and everyone always forgets that the Nazis invaded their own country first. We do have to be ready to go out and defend our neighbors, but we also have to continue working on building that community and building those support systems together and with each other before the time comes when we need to go out in the cold and resist people who are trying to hurt our friends and neighbors, and us too.
Yeah, one of the things that I actually have a lot of friends who live in Minneapolis. I work with I have a whole department I work with that's in Indianapolis, and then I just happen to have some friends there. And my take on their quick response, because you know it's been so well organized, is that they have practiced this, and that is resilience. You have to practice resilience, and so they've done this before, and they've been building up to it for a long time, and they are, they're not a monolith, but they are a strong community. They have a strong sense of community, and that's all. They have demonstrated patterns of resilience for a long time.
I have to do a hard left here, away from Minnesota. I'm sorry, guys. I have a student, and teaching resilience, practicing resilience it should be a college, I think it probably is a college course. You would know best, is it? It's such a massive undertaking internally to be resilient, and it takes so much effing practice. And I have a student who I will call Jay, and she went to school in the inner city, Indianapolis, and her dad was shot by a neighbor, and then her mom died from an overdose. And then her uncle and aunt took her in, so she was luckily, she was in foster care briefly, and then her uncle and aunt took her in. And she really struggles with, obviously, she really struggles with connecting with others, because she's, just based on that alone, she's an adult. You know, she's separate from her peers. And she's told me recently, I don't know if it's still the case, but now she's moving to Florida. So there's another shattering of her safety net that she's not really terribly excited about. And she came to me for advice, and I'm like, I didn't say this, but I'm like, dude, what am I supposed to tell you? And this has been a really rough week for me, so I try to find things to rely on to stay motivated and stay whole throughout the week. And she came to me, I think, because I am relentlessly positive, which is surprising unto you, I'm sure, because I'm very dour with you guys. But for them, I will be positive and irritating, actually. But they like it. They secretly like it. And so Jay just never stops talking now. And which is good. That doesn't sound good, but it's good. And she's just constantly talking, and she's constantly opening up, and it makes me want to cry, actually. And how to be resilient like Jay. But what I'm trying to get to is that all of this stuff is a distraction, and we do need to act, but we need to stay true to ourselves and be who we are and not let things like hatred or etc. to shake who we are. Nazis have come, but we can't lose ourselves in the game they made, is, I suppose, what I'm trying to say. Let's not lose sight of ourselves. And if we don't lose sight of ourselves and we stay compassionate and loving and care for each other, people will come to us and we will win. It's inevitable. Just like the Nazis, they will fall. It's going to happen. So it just takes time and effort. Thanks for coming.
You have time for one more. And coffee hour afterwards to continue the conversation.
Talk about this all day.
One of the things I've discovered through the years of being dumped into a situation of being a parent to four kids, all under 10, was one day at a time. Because if you look at the whole mess, it's overwhelming, and that saps your strength. And if you can just take it one day at a time, you will get there.
Yep.
And now, in the spirit of compassion and taking things one thing at a time and building community, this is a time of our service to share joys and concerns. And so if anybody has a joy and or a concern you'd like to share with us,